You are now listening to the Sports Life Talk podcast, hosted by Kevin Thomas and Serge Vasudevic, where life without sports is just talk, on blogtalkradio.com.
Welcome to episode 2 of Sports Life Talk, where life without sports is just talk. This is KT with my man Serge. How's it going, man?
I'm good, man. Blessed to be here. How are you?
Hey, I'm lit under the weather, man, but, you know, I got to push through it.
I got to give you a birthday shout-out, man. Happy birthday.
I appreciate it. For everybody that don't know, tomorrow I'll be the big 4-0. I accept any kind of gifts, gift cards in particular.
Nice.
All right, Serge, let's go on a little feedback that we got from episode 1.
So, man, I had quite a few of my friends who I specifically had reached out to and asked to listen to the podcast and give me some feedback, and I'm always open to, you know, criticism and things like that. So I think I, you know, for the most part, they wanted to kind of know, kind of go into a little more detail about, you know, how did we even get to this point individually and obviously together? And, you know, what made you really want to do this? And, you know, do you have some, you know, other goals behind or agenda behind even trying to do this podcast and having listeners and things like that? So I think first and foremost, I just kind of wanted to give the background on, like, how I got into sports. If based on the previous podcast, you know, we had discussions about, like, you know, how I started watching football and liking the Colts. But more importantly than that, I think I also knew that at a very young age that I was really good at picking up, like, friends' phone numbers, for example. It was something that came really easy to for me to remember. And so just kind of watching sports and seeing teams, players, jersey numbers, what college they went to, if they're in the pros, and if they get traded, kind of like being able to figure out what all team that they've been on and things like that. So it started becoming like a normal part of my routine that I wasn't even trying to do. It just kind of became natural. And I knew eventually as years and years went on that the more and more I understood each analytical aspect of each and every individual sport, that there's so much that goes into it. There's so much that goes into that behind the scenes that maybe when I first started watching sports, it wasn't there. But obviously with all the technology advancements and social media and things like that and blogs and websites and having the access to be able to really get to the core of what really goes on in each sport, you know, how a team is built and what kind of things go into practice and why teams make certain decisions as far as signing contracts for players and or why they cut certain players or why they trade certain players. There's just so many layers to how deep this can go. And I'm very thankful that it was just a gift that I guess that was bestowed upon me. And this kind of naturally I just gravitated towards. So that's kind of how I figured out that sports was something that was it started becoming a normal, regular, routine part of my life, and that I didn't have to go do extra research because when it was put in front of me, it was already stored in my brain, and I was able to apply it back into regular conversations.
And I think for me, I think I'm grateful that I grew up in an age where I didn't have social media, where we were forced to go outside.
Absolutely.
And one of the things that you did when you were outside, you played football in the street, you played in the grass, throw up tackle, you played basketball, you played soccer, you've done... Even though you didn't have a place to play baseball, you made places. So I think that's where my love for sports came. And then just gravitating towards just watching it, watching individuals do things that I think I can do, but I'm realistic, I really can't. So that was one of the things that really grabbed me, is just from a young age, just playing sports outside with my friends, just fellowshipping. So that's how I came into it. So what about the what? We said how, so what about your what?
I'll tell you about the what. I feel like a lot of general sports fans kind of take it overboard as far as just understanding that at the end of the day, it is just sports. It isn't a life and death situation. Sports is there as a entertainment industry, sort of, to speak, kind of like music and movies and things like that, that allows us to get away from our normal life for a few hours, you know. So if you're watching, say, for example, you know, today's Sunday and their Sunday football game on. When your actual, you know, when your favorite team is playing on television, you're able to sit there for basically about 3 hours, you know, have, you know, whether it's family time, you know, enjoy some good food, and just be able to not have to think about your, you know, your bills and regular things that, you know, as an adult especially, that you really have to obviously be responsible for. And obviously also from a young age for kids, sports can, you know, give a lot of things that can advance them into their, you know, adulthood life, which is things like giving them discipline, work ethic and punctuality, and giving a certain type of structure that can allow them to, you know, be really good at just anything that they decide to do in their future life, not just in sports, but it can really enable them to do so much more as the years progress and their adult life starts really coming into fruition. And I just really want to make sure that the audience that we captivate really understands that we're not always going to, you know, first and foremost, we're not a debate show. We're a podcast that we're just here to talk about sports topics. There's going to be things, obviously, we are on the same page about. There's going to be things that we differentiate. And there might even be, say, you know, certain things that we both agree or we have the same exact idea. But how we came to that conclusion about that particular topic still might be different, even though we are in agreement. And just being able to have a good conversation about each, you know, those type of things, I think is really important. And just making sure that people really realize that it isn't life and death. And, you know, like, for example, if I wanted to give an example of how I feel like people take it over the board, is I see some of these videos where people are literally crashing and picking up their TVs and throwing it across the wall.
Burning jerseys.
When, what is that really doing for you, you know, come 24 hours later when you realize, like, man, I don't have a TV because I got that upset at a game that I have nothing to do with, that I'm just a fan of, whether it's a team, players, whatever, and you took it to that extent. And I think, you know, that just doesn't set a good precedent for anybody else that's around you, because then they feel like they can do the same when they're your age or whenever they feel like. So,
a couple of things that you touched on that I want to reiterate. Teaching discipline, punctuality, work ethic, and give structure. Those are all the things that I see in school, because for the listeners that don't know, I'm a coach. And our athletes that really want it, they possess everything.
Yep.
They're disciplined, they're punctual, their work ethic is off the charts, and the structure that they're given, they apply that in the classroom. So I'm glad that you brought that up. That's one of the things that we do need for our young people. We need more stand-up men, just individual and women. So I'm glad that you said that.
Yeah.
So let's move on to the why.
Yeah. So on the why, I just want to make sure that, from my personal opinion and perspective, that I have always thought of making sure that how can we figure out a way to bring people together, regardless of race, color, religion, you know, beliefs, whatever it may be, that at the end of the day that we are man and woman and we are humans. And, you know, if we're able to separate everything, like, and we come down to the core things of just even just a regular everyday life, which is the life part of our show, Sports Life Talk, is just to understand the magnitude of where we are, and then just overall just making sure that by utilizing sports, because when you go to a game, for example, if you go to the Cowboys game, you're basically seeing 100,000 people. 100,000 people that are all cheering. For the most part, nobody really knows each other besides maybe a couple people that you went to the game with, or maybe you know some friends that are also going to the same game. But for the most part, 99% of the people that are at the game don't know each other, but they're all rooting for the same thing. So there is where they have a connection. But at the same time, I feel like when they leave the game, they kind of go back into their regular life, and, you know, they kind of forget that, you know, we have some, you know, similar likes, and we don't really have to you know, pick and choose on, oh, why we don't like, you know, maybe certain people and why we want to yell at certain people. But just a few days ago, we were all at the game and we were actually cheering on for the same thing. And we all had the same mindset, same goal, and we wanted the same end result. And that should be able to be applied into regular day life too, because sports, like I keep mentioning, it isn't a life and death situation.
And I want to piggyback on that. The why for me would be sports is the ultimate icebreaker. Have you ever been in a store and you've seen a young lady or young man that's wearing a Colts jersey or a Cowboys jersey, and you're like, man, I hope we get one tonight. Yep. And just like that, this immediate conversation.
Right.
That's one of the things that draws me in. It's just meeting people and talking. And what easier way to do it than with sports? So that's our why. So let's move on to our NFL picks. And for those of you who are listening, it's around 3 o'clock, and it's the time for the afternoon games to start. We normally do it in the morning, but because of my late night, of course, I was at the birthday party, and I do have the sniffles, so that's me. I'm struggling, but we're going to make it through. So, Serge, who do you have for the Rams and Seahawks?
Well, coming off the game last week, which I actually picked the Rams to beat the Eagles, and the Eagles obviously shocked me, and even though Nick Foles got hurt, Carson Wentz got hurt, they still ended up winning the game. And obviously, both teams, same division. If the game is in Seattle, we all know how, you know, hard it is for any team to go in and win in Seattle.
Yeah, so I'm 12th man. Yeah,
yeah. I'm gonna go ahead and pick the Seahawks on this one. I just think that, you know, just because they do have something to play for and they're trying to get the seeding, and obviously, if they lose, and they'll be more in the wild card hunt as opposed to trying to win the division, which is really big, obviously, come playoff time.
I'm going to go with the Seahawks, too, just because I think Russell Wilson is the MVP of the league, and I think that he's able to overcome all the shortcomings of that offense to beat the Rams. Okay. How about the Patriots versus Steelers, which is America's game of the week?
Man, this game is like AFC Championship preview right here. Man, the way the Steelers have been playing – Antonio Brown, Le'Veon Bell, Ben Roethlisberger, and even, surprisingly, even their defense has actually been playing really, really well, and they have the home field advantage. On the flip side, man, can you really ever, you know, go against Tom Brady, especially considering how they struggled on Monday night, which was a game that I thought they would easily win.
Yeah, it seems like you're on the fence on this one. Like you're
I am. In the middle. I am, and I just know how the Patriots, as long as Bill Belichick and Tom Brady have been there, how they rebound and show up after a loss, and especially not just any loss, but a loss to a division rival, and made them look really average.
And then they didn't have Gronk, too, so that's another thing, and they will have him tonight.
Yes. I think the – man, this is hard. Well, I'm going to go with the Patriots.
Okay, you're going Patriots, I'm going Steelers, just because – the way the Patriots played last week against the Dolphins, even though after a loss they come back even stronger, but if Le'Veon Bell and Antonio Brown comes and Big Ben shows up, there's no reason why they can't beat the Patriots. So I'm going Steelers, you got the Patriots.
Yeah, and the Steelers, Le'Veon Bell, I think there was some stat out that said if he runs the ball more than 23 times, they don't lose. So
that's common sense. You have the best, one of the best running backs in the league.
I think he's the best. Run him. I think he's the best running back in the league because he can catch the ball, block, run out of the backfield. And he's just, his patience is – I don't think I've ever really seen another running back since I started watching football who has that much patience when it comes to finding the hole and just hitting it. He's really, really good. And Antonio Brown is having an MVP-caliber season too. So I would not be surprised at all if the Steelers, and you were right, and the Steelers won.
All right, let's before we go on to the Cowboys versus the Raiders – you mentioned
we got to really talk about the Cowboys game.
Yes, we do. It's a must. You know that. You said Le'Veon Bell is the best running back in the league. Give me your top five running backs in the league right now.
My top five running backs.
It doesn't have to be in any kind of order, just the top five.
Le'Veon Bell, Zeke.
You're probably forgetting about David Johnson, who got hurt for the Cardinals. He's a top five.
David Johnson is definitely right up there.
I know I put you on the spot, but
you did, man. You did. You know, I want to say that even the way that Leonard Fournette was running the ball this year, I mean, I know he's just a rookie, but he was showing a lot of promise. Same thing with even Dalvin Cook before he got hurt.
Another member of my fantasy squad that got hurt along with Carson Wentz.
And, you know, depending on what you're looking for and the way their offense has been running, I also feel like the Saints, I mean, they got two-headed monsters with both Ingram and Kamara.
You got LeSean McCoy.
I'll definitely put him in the top five for sure. I was really hoping for, you know, Marshawn Lynch to make a comeback, but, you know, that didn't happen.
And let's hope he doesn't make that comeback tonight. So,
I think I would probably put Todd Gurley in there too. So, yeah.
So, let's move on to the Cowboys versus the Raiders. Who do you got?
I'm going with the Cowboys. The Raiders have been super disappointing this season. I know they got the home field, but the Cowboys, I have obviously been on a real roll. They got Sean Lee back, which obviously makes them a very, very different and dangerous team. I think the offense is also being smart about how they use their running backs and using both Rod Smith and Alfred Morris. You know, even Dez caught a touchdown last week. So
he also had some drops last week, too.
And that's probably an every week thing. But, I think just the Raiders, just the way they've been playing. I can't even put my finger on why they're not playing up to their level. I mean, it's not like anybody's really hurt. They have the receivers. They have Marshawn Lynch. They have Derek Carr. You know, they pretty much still have the same defense. They've been playing under par, and just because of that, the way they've been playing, and the Cowboys obviously have more to play for than the Raiders do. So for that reason alone, I'll pick the Cowboys to win.
And last week, I picked the Cowboys to beat the Giants 72 to a -3.
Yeah.
So I'll be more realistic this week. I got the Cowboys winning 27-24.
You got them. That's a pretty close game. I don't think it's going to be even that close.
Well, you know, the Cowboys, they play down to their competition.
That's true.
We see that. So we're going to play down. And
going
like,
to the black hole. Mm-hmm.
Exactly. So it's a little intimidating. So we'll see how Dak and the boys handle that. So let's move on. Let's talk about Tom Brady and his performance this year and how age ain't nothing but a number. You know the Aaliyah song?
Yeah.
So,
you know, Tom Brady, obviously playing against my favorite football player, you know, Peyton Manning for all those years in the AFC, going to all those, you know, whether it's divisional playoff games, championship games, and just the way he played, you know, I'll be very honest, I, you know, didn't like him. I knew, obviously, he was a great quarterback, but as the years have progressed and to be able to kind of do the same thing year in, year out, doesn't matter who the receivers are.
Yeah, with different personnel. That's just amazing.
And it's like you got to give props where it's due. And then to be able to figure out a way to – I mean, he literally – yeah, the system is kind of set up for them to do a lot of dip and dunks and things like that. But, you know, he's got this crazy diet and workout regimen that he's on and how he stays conditioned. And but he's just a student of the game, and he takes so much great care of himself. I mean, I know he says he wants to play till he's 45.
Do you see that happening?
No, I don't. At the end of the day, all it takes is one injury. And obviously he's only had one big injury, and that was in 2008 or 2009, I believe, and he got a knee injury. And I think, obviously, when you're, you know, that's almost 10 years ago. So at around age 30 or 31, having that kind of injury to recover from it, if you had something similar to that, especially like a back or a knee, ACL, Achilles, which are usually advanced age players that happen, then it's so hard to want to go through the rehab, go through the workouts, and start, you know, basically from scratch and do it all over again. It's amazing. I got to give him, you know, God, I see another 2 years for sure. Two more years after this season, I see that. But I think that's going to be the end of it.
But like you said, he's a student of the game. And he's one of the guys, I think he actually loves going to training camp and, you know, being with the guys and just being there, unlike Brett Favre, who's one of the greatest quarterbacks ever.
Prima donna.
Who, okay, I'm not coming back just so I won't have to go to offseason or whatever.
Yeah.
I mean,
wait it out. Mm-hmm.
Yes. So Tom Brady, he's a student of the game. He loves the game. And it's hard for me because I don't like the Patriots, but I respect them. They're cheaters. And if you're not cheating, you're not winning.
Yeah.
We all know that.
Yeah.
But Tom Brady he has to be considered the greatest quarterback of all time. I know we got Joe Montana and his records, but Just look at Tom Brady. Look at his list of accomplishments. How many times has he been to the Super Bowl? Seven?
Mm-hmm. 5-2.
So he's 5-2.
And lost to the same team on some ridiculous, crazy,
it's always lucky a play. Crazy catch or right. some kind of play that ruins it. And also, they got after him on defense, too. So that's right. another thing. Right. So staying on the NFL topic, let's talk about the NFL Network guys who are being suspended for sexual harassment. What you got?
I feel like there's one coming out almost every day of the week. You know, it's kind of like, kind of even taking it away from just the NFL Network guys, we've obviously seen a whole bunch of sexual harassment stuff that's been coming out of Hollywood, some of, you know, with some of the directors, and then it's kind of came out with some, you know, artists, record labels and CEOs and companies. Now we got these, couple of them from ESPN, we had NFL Network. I think I even saw something this morning talking about the Carolina Panthers owner also was caught for some misconduct, and I guess he already settled with, you know, the people. It's just, as a man, it's very, you know, difficult to kind of really grasp, like, what exactly, especially in a work environment, because it's one thing to be able to, like, you know, you're out, you're, you know, at the mall, you're at a club, whatever, and you're, like, talking to a girl, and you say certain things to, you know, whatever, obviously, you know, pick them up or whatever you want and try to get their information to, you know, develop something. But to be able to have to do things like this and to this degree at work, you know, obviously exchanging information because you work together, but then using that platform of having the information to text them and sending them pictures and, you know, and then degrading, you know, the lady, regardless if they are in a relationship or not in a relationship, just because you want to get something across. And some of these guys are married, some of these guys aren't married. It just, you know, makes it that much worse for the next person that has to come in and take over that position because, you know, how do I know you're not going to do the same thing? And it's just really difficult. And because it is an industry that is obviously dominated by men, but so now you're also making it difficult for women to want to go work in an environment like that because they're always thinking that, well, man, I don't want to be around in a situation where I'm constantly getting harassed and, you know, dudes are touching me or they're texting me inappropriate pictures and calling me names. And I don't know. It's just very, it's got such a negative energy behind it. And then it's like the NFL already has enough issues going on. And this doesn't send any good precedent because most of all these guys – are guys who used to play in the NFL. And because they used to play in the NFL is why they even get a job in the first place.
And they're Hall of Famers too, some of them.
Yeah, and I don't know what the agenda behind it is. Like, do you just think because of the status and, you know, who you are that you're going to be able to get away with it? Like, ah, no, she ain't going to say nothing because, you know, they need me more than they need her. Like, I think that's kind of like mentality too, where, no, I have a good rapport with her. Like, I think it's cool. She winked at me. Like, I can say this, like, so it's, you know, but I do also kind of get the sense that, you know, a lot more people are coming out now because of somebody else has been whistleblowing for other, you know, genres, whatever you want to call it, in industries. So now it's giving these women the license to come out and say what you want to say. And then as long as you have proof, which is more likely text messages and pictures and stuff, I mean, you know, they're always going to win any case because of just that information.
Well, I do. I feel sorry for the victims. I feel sorry for the women that they actually know their stuff, and they're just trying to go in there and compete in a male-dominated industry.
Right.
Now, when I look at shows like First Take or The Undisputed, mm-hmm. when you look at the moderators, what is the first thing you notice? They're gorgeous. They're beautiful.
Oh.
So that's both of them. Yes. Yeah. Joy Taylor, Molly Karam. Yes.
Yeah.
But that's the one.
Right,
yeah, that's the one thing about that is they're looked at for their looks first.
Absolutely.
And then their sports knowledge, which isn't right.
Right.
So that's one of the things that they have to deal with. And for all you listeners, you know who Sarah Spain is, right, on ESPN? Mm-hmm. Go watch a video that her and some other journalists did. Where all the stuff that people are saying to them on social media, they had the guys just read it to them, to their faces.
Oh, wow.
Not the actual guys that wrote it, just men in general. And you look at that and you're like, man, it's sickening that just because she's a woman, you have to say, oh, well, you don't know anything. And the favorite line is, hey, you need to stay in the kitchen.
Yeah.
Really?
Right.
Are we still doing that?
Yeah.
I mean,
and a lot of things like that, you know, coming back to even just like our show and our podcast, Sports and Life. And these are the things that, yes, it involves sports, but it still connects back to life, because this is like, these are things that are, you know, getting in the way of their livelihood. Because just for me to have to even go report to human resources or my boss at work is going to be hard enough to bring up a conversation, because it's already such a touchy topic that I'm almost embarrassed to even bring it up. Then there's so many layers that happen after that, because, man, what if they want that guy over my potential because they feel like, you know, it's a male-dominated industry, so they're going to pick them over me. I don't want to lose my job by me basically whistleblowing. Okay, then, you know, and it's like, okay, now we go to, okay, I'm going to file a case. Okay, now you're going to have to spend money on an attorney. Now you got to go to court. And there's just so many things that continuously will keep progressing that it just makes the whole situation, not just what you see on TV or what you read on social media, but there's so many other ramifications from just one incident that people just kind of look at it and say, like, well, why is she even there in the first place? Man, she was probably leading him on. She probably made some other, you know, comments to him. Maybe they were at lunch and, you know, she might have, like, grabbed him or something, and he probably thought, like, oh, that was, like, you know, no. Like, but that still doesn't, even if that happened, that still doesn't give you the license to just go and say things that you want to say and send, you know, inappropriate pictures. At the end of the day, we're talking about, like, guys that are in their low 30s upwards of, you know, upper 40s that probably have kids. And how does it feel when you even, because, you know, every time you make a decision to do something, you actually have to think about it first before you do it. So the fact that you're actually sitting there thinking about it, and then you still decide to do it anyway, knowing that, well, on one end, but on the other, well, no, like, they're not going to do anything to me because I'm untouchable. And then they do it.
And another thing is, if they do come out and speak on it, now they're jeopardizing their career.
Yeah.
Because say if I come out and I say something against ESPN, now Fox News, NBC, CBS, they'll look at me like, no, we don't want her. She's trouble.
Right.
When she's just protecting herself and her livelihood and her right, you know, to work. Mm-hmm. So that's a touchy subject, man. And I think we both agree that we feel for the victims, but we also know that there are a lot of them right now that's coming out for name recognition. So to the ones who are doing that, you know, you're messing up everybody. You're making it harder for the victims. So let's move on to another thing, another topic that's in the NBA, and that's the Lakers meeting with LaVar Ball so he can tone it down a little bit.
Yeah. Man, when I first heard this, and the fact that they even had to put the story out, I think it's been almost three weeks after they had the meeting, just kind of goes to show you. I mean, it's crazy to know that usually teams meet with players, agents, but to have to meet with the player's parent, mother or father, because of what they're saying, what that individual is saying about the team, especially the coach, and really just kind of not only obviously putting a target on his son, but then now you're getting to a point where you're questioning Luke Walton in his coaching decision that he makes, because that's his job that he's hired to do. But now you're questioned because you don't feel like your son's getting enough playing time, or you don't feel like he's using it the right way. And then now they have to talk to you. And then even after they talk to you, you still come out and make it seem like, yeah, they talked to me, but at the end of the day, they need to listen to what I have to say. Well, that's what they said. They said that if you have something to say, why don't you come talk to us first, and then you can say it, because that way we can filter in, okay, how to go about saying it, who to say it to, because, and I do have to kind of put the blame also a little bit on some of the media as well.
Because yeah, I was just about to say that.
They're giving him the platform to also make comments like this, and then as a reporter, asking questions to where he's gonna answer the way he wants to. So as much as I don't like a lot of the things that he does or says, one thing I can, I guess, respect him for, he's consistent and he keeps it real, he keeps it authentic, and he does say what's on his mind. Not saying it's right or I agree with it, but I can at least know that he's being naturally to himself, because that's just the way he as an individual person is, was, and seems like always will be. Now the Lakers are just trying to see, hey, can you at least kind of pick and choose when you say things? And if you do say things, don't talk about the organization. Don't talk about the team, especially in a negative light. If you're going to talk about it in a positive light, nobody cares. But when you start nitpicking on things that really should be just, everything should be kept internal, I think that's when it really starts becoming an issue. And I'm glad they had the conversation with them. Let's see, I guess, as a little more time goes, we're about a third of the way through the season. I kind of want to see, like, when the All-Star break comes out, say he doesn't make the All-Star team. Of course, I don't expect him to make the All-Star team, but I'm sure some reporter will ask him, did you think your son should be an All-Star? Of course he's going to say yes. The same guy who also said he's, better than Steph Curry already, he's also the same guy who's going to say, of course my son should be in the All-Star game. So now, at that point, where do we go from there? What is he talking about? Is he still talking about Luke Walton and so on and so forth?
So my response to this is, he did the same thing when his kid was in high school. He did it when he was in college. He's not going to change.
Consistency.
So, like you said, so you know what you can change? You keep talking. We won't play Lonzo at all. Let's see how much you'll like that.
Right.
We'll just have to treat you like he's a high school student and you're a high school parent. Shut up. That's all he needs to do. And like you said, it's the media's fault. They want a quote. Where can you get a good quote? LeVar Ball. So what do you think about his decision to remove his kids from college and high school, and now they're going to play in Lithuania?
So I guess also kind of looking back at what we discussed about this similar, basically bringing up the kids and, taking them out of school. I know one of the points that I had made last week on the podcast was that I just think that taking away from what a normal young adult should be going through as far as, hanging out with friends, that the whole experience of being in high school for the youngest one and for LiAngelo in college, just even if he's only going to be playing at UCLA for a year, possibly two, because I don't think he was going
to
be a high draft.
No, he'd probably have to go at least 3 years.
Yeah, so it's like, but he doesn't just to get to be around campus and make friends and just do those things that makes the college and high school experience that much better. That was my whole point of, or what I wanted to make my point across last week. But once they obviously got signed to a team in Lithuania, understanding and reading about like what all really goes on over there, what the team is like, how much they're getting paid. And at the end of the day, it makes, obviously I understand that he just wants his kids to just get playing time, and he wants to make sure that they play together, because ideally he sees down in the future that all three of them are going to play together. My whole thing is now, the other aspect of it is like, you're making them go, they've lived in the United States of America all their life. Now all of a sudden you want them to go overseas, they don't know the language, they don't eat the food, just the whole culture of how things are about every day, even the time change, There's just so many things that I'm sure he's thought about all this, or maybe he hasn't if he's just looking out for himself. But I just think that taking his kids and putting him in Lithuania, and, it could have been in China, it could have been anywhere, I don't think that it would have made a difference, because it's still having to adapt to a completely new environment. And I just don't know how fair that is, because now they have to get training on all of that on top of having to figure out how to play the game over there, because the game isn't played the same way on the court. Plays aren't run the same way. The guys that you play against and with aren't the same size, speed, just the way the overall, moving the ball and getting so many shots and things like that. Just how the game is played is completely different, overseas than it is over here. So we'll see how it turns out. I'm sure as soon as they start playing, we'll probably start seeing videos on YouTube and on social media of how we, and then every single game and every shot that they take is going to be nitpick. And all it does is for LeVar Ball is it lifts up their brand, because people are talking about the Ball family. So.
The one thing you said, he's looking out for himself, LeVar Ball. Charles Barkley came out and said that he thinks that LeVar is a bad father, says that he's exploiting his kids and trying to make money. What are your thoughts on that?
I think the bad father comment is going a little overboard. I think I know, I understand that's his opinion. We can, you know, sit here and nitpick what makes a bad father and a good father. But I think the fact that he's even in their life.
Why do you think people think that he's a bad father? See, because I don't understand that. Has he made bad decisions as a father?
I think that's a completely different topic. Then I think if he were to pick his words a little better, now this is just my opinion, but if he were to pick his words a little better and not say bad father, no, he is a father of their kids who has made bad choices or bad decisions because they're not good for their long-term future. I think that would have sounded a lot better than saying, hey, he's a bad father because he's exploiting them. And he might be, you know, we don't know how he thinks. We don't know how he feels. Like, outside of, you know, the stuff that we hear when he goes on interviews and things like that is merely just, well, we don't know him on a personal level. You can watch their ball family show or whatever. That still doesn't get you to the core of exactly how he feels and what he thinks. So to say he's a bad father, I think is a very, I just don't think that's the right thing to say, but you can, you know, say a lot of other things about him and not agree with his decisions because, but the exploiting part, I mean, the proof is in the pudding sometimes, I feel like, and sometimes you got to just look at it and see, but at the same time, you also got to look at it as, you know, he's also the same individual who helped them get to where they are today. So if he's already been making all the decisions throughout their entire life to get to where they are now and successful as they are now, then what difference does it make for him to continuously make those same decisions? Regardless of how you feel about it, you know, the fact that he's still, you know, it's not like he's pimping out his kids or something, you know. So I think it's nothing for the negative in the sense of he wants them to play basketball. That's all they've done since they were little kids. It's all they ever have done is play basketball. And he wants them to continuously play basketball. He didn't go for the bigger contract. He just wanted to make sure he figured out a team that will take them in, play them together. Doesn't matter how much money he's making. And I know he also made a comment towards the end of that interview, you know, Barkley did, where he said, you know, if he was such a good father, then, you know, he would stay over there with them instead of coming back the next day. Well, he came back. Well, the kids are also back here. They don't probably have to go back till the season is, you know, about to start up or training camp about to start up. So because they all came and they were all at the game when the Lakers played the Knicks in MSG. So it wasn't like he just left the kids there and, you know, he came back. So,
yeah, saying he's a bad father, that's just a stretch. Now, saying that he's exploiting his kid for money, I don't think he's doing it for himself. I actually think he's doing it for his family. He's trying the Big Baller brand. That way we don't have to give our money to Nike, Reebok, Under Armour, Adidas. It stays with us. So saying that he's exploiting his kids, that's an overstatement. Because like you said, he's in their life. He went to Lithuania with them. It's just his mouth that gets him in trouble. That's the one thing. If he could just be quiet and just actually allow himself to be humbled from some of the decisions that he's made, I think they would like him more. Instead of just, okay, let's put a microphone in his face, see how dumb the next quote he's going to do.
Right.
You know?
Right. It's. I just feel bad for – I feel bad – the worst mostly for Alonzo just because – there's a lot of people who don't like what LeVar does, so now they're wishing bad things upon Lonzo. Like, they want him to fail. They want him to, the worse he shoots, the better, the more room that they have to talk about, like, see, your son is not even that good. Like,
yeah, he's giving them ammo to go after Lonzo. Exactly. And the one of his problems is he wants to control every situation. Yep. And as a parent, yes, I would love to say, hey, I want my son to go to a good college, to go to the NBA, go to the NFL. But it depends on what my child is able to do, not from what I'm saying.
Right.
He wants to control the narrative, which is not going to help in life.
No.
All right, so let's move on to a decision. Well, we've all heard, is LeBron better than Jordan?
Yep.
Yeah. Well, Scottie Pippen thinks statistically that LeBron is better overall than Jordan. What are your thoughts on that?
I think he's got a very good point, and I actually agree with him just because obviously he's already played, you know, more minutes than him. Well, if you play more minutes than somebody, you're probably going to have more points, more rebounds, more assists, and things like
and
that.
And he also came in at 17. He came in at 17, 18.
18 years old, yeah, and so. Jordan came in when he was 20 or 21.
So that's a whole 2 years.
Yeah, of course. And now, I think you can't hold that against LeBron because LeBron came out of high school versus Jordan didn't. But the one thing you can't hold against him is the time that Michael Jordan took away from the game because that, you know, that's his choice. Like, yeah. What does that have to do with me? So, yes, he had the advantage of coming in a couple years early, but how long he plays, how well he plays, when he plays, I mean, going to all the Olympics and, you know, I think the mileage that he's exploited on himself and going to consecutive finals after finals after finals after finals and playing, you know, all those heavy minutes, you would think that he would obviously start slowing down, and he hasn't. And I'm just like, I'm just really mesmerized. I'll pretty much try to watch every game that he plays because I know that because he's a once-in-a-generation player, and I used to do the same thing when I even first started watching basketball. It was towards the last few years of Jordan's Bulls career, and even when the, you know, Wizards were ever on TV, I would try to watch it because, you know, it's like the last bit of pieces of greatness that we don't know if we'll get. And it's just crazy because he retires, and 2 months later, the draft happens, and LeBron comes in the league. And then, yeah, there's all this hype because you've never even seen the hype, so you don't really know, is he going to live up to the hype or not? And then as years go by, you're just like, this guy is – he doesn't – it's like people start saying, like, we got to check his birth certificate because there's no way he's only 18.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And it's just – now it's consistently that. I mean, he's turning 33 in 2 weeks, and – to see that he's still the best player in the league, and he's actually having his best season ever in the league, is just mind-boggling. So I think it's, you know, this debate is a back and forth, ongoing. You got your people that love Jordan, that are never going to say that LeBron's better. You got your people that grew up only watching LeBron, never really saw Jordan play, so they only want to say that LeBron's, first and foremost, they don't even play the same position. And I think that has to be like a, you know, caveat just right off the top. Number two, the game is completely played differently. What one is asked to do versus what the other is asked to do is also different. Because no way did Jordan ever have the ability to pass the ball the way LeBron ever did. But Jordan was never really asked to also be a playmaker. He was scorer. I mean, and the greatest probably at that ever. So now LeBron, scoring is like second nature to him. Like, he can do it, but I'm not going to make it my priority unless we're down in the game. You know, I need to make an impact play. I need to score. I need to get to the free throw line. Whatever it is, like, that's how. But he wants to, because if the team is playing better, they're more confident, it's easier for him. Not only I'll get more room to go to the basket, I'll get less double teams because they're, you know, scared to leave those 3-point shooters. So overall, I think talent wise, I think LeBron is a better player, but I think he cannot pass Jordan at least, if he doesn't win at least two more championships, I don't think he could ever say he's passed him on the overall when he's retired. Who is better? He has to win at least two more championships, I feel like. So he can go to five more. I can see him going to at least three more. And if he can somehow pull off two out of those three, I don't see how you couldn't. Statistics versus going to that many finals, winning five times, having all the statisticals way above him. I mean, it's not even going to be like a couple hundred or 1,000 points. It's going to be a few thousand in all those categories, you know. It's a good chance he's going to play 20 years.
Now, as far as a scorer, we know Jordan's the best. He's better, hands down.
Yeah.
Passing the ball, LeBron. Rebounding the ball, LeBron. Defensively, LeBron.
Yeah.
So I agree with Scotty on that, but we know that he will never, ever, unless he wins five straight, he will never be able to take the throne away from Jordan. Just because of the whole, he went to the finals six times, 6-0, never went to a game seven.
Yeah.
So even LeBron, he can keep going to the finals constantly, constantly, constantly. And so unless he's winning them consecutively and he's beating teams like Golden State, they're not going to consider him the greatest, which is sad because we have one A, one B pretty much. Yeah. So you can either or, you'll be good.
And I, sorry to cut you off, but I just want people that listen to this podcast just to really know, if you watch basketball, like, try to watch every game. It's kind of like Tom Brady. If he's playing, try to watch it, because you don't know when somebody that great. Not, you know, I know Aaron Rodgers is there, and there's a couple other quarterbacks that are maybe in the makings, but when you have once-in-a-generational type of players, if you don't appreciate it then when they're gone, you're going to be like, oh, man, why does the game feel different? Why does it not, you know, it just lost a little bit of flavor. And I know that's going to happen with LeBron, because nobody controls the whole landscape of how media, social media, and just how much stuff is all over TV, what people talk about, the narratives, and all this stuff. Like, I mean, he's made an impact on, I mean, even the, 2011, the fact that there was even a, you know, strike season, or at least part of the season, was because of him going to and joining, you know, Dwayne Wade and, you know, Chris Bosh in Miami, you know, the NBA on the owners are like, oh, like, you know, this is not even right, and we got to figure out a way to get around this. Like, how can we set up the CBA to where we can't have players joining forces? Well, it kept happening. And then even Kevin Durant going to the Warriors were only able to do that. Why? Because Steph Curry was still on a $12 million per year contract when he was already had won the MVP and already won a ring, but he's considered basically number one, if not number two player in the league, but he was only getting paid $12 million. Well, now we have salary cap to go after a max player and sign KD. And so just those things, same thing goes for Kevin Durant. Same thing goes for Steph Curry. Like, those are once in a generational type of players. If you get to see them on TV, please tune in, because I know regular season, a lot of people don't even care because there's no, you know, meaning behind it. But at the end of the day, like, when they're on the court, you know, it's greatness to watch, because all it takes is one injury, and if they're out for the season, well, you won't get to see them, you know, till next season. So I try to, all the big games and all the great players that are playing on the court, whether they're losing or I know they're going to win the game or not, at least for a couple of quarters, just really just watch and see how they do things, and watch their, you know, footwork, and watch just, you know, just analyzing their whole complete game and how great that they really are. You know, because we're witnessing greatness in the NBA with the talent that there's there. So
as far as LeBron goes, we know that anywhere that he goes in the NBA, that team is considered a favorite to win the championship. Yep. So one of the rumors that's going around right now is that LeBron would consider going to the Rockets. If he did, how would that change the landscape of the NBA?
Oh, man. Well, you can pretty much put, I think, from the Eastern Conference perspective, by him leaving the Cavs, you could pretty much just take one more team out of the potential finals picture. And out of the East, I don't really see anybody besides the Boston Celtics. An outside chance, maybe Philly, obviously, as they continue to get better.
Yeah, they look good.
And I'm sure they'll add somebody, too. But in the West, obviously, the Warriors are always going to be at the top. The Spurs are going to be right there. But if he goes to the Rockets, which I would almost want to stop watching basketball if he did that, just because I can't stand the Rockets.
I'm with you. I hate the Rockets.
But I could see why it would make sense. I honestly don't think he's going to leave, first and foremost. I know this rumor. We're going to hear Lakers. We're going to hear the Rockets. And it's too early, first and foremost. We got to see how the season plays out, whether they win or lose. If they win, he clearly stays. Even if they lose, it's how they lost. How much did they lose by? What was the series like? You know, and as long as he knows, for him, he put, you know, a all his efforts into it and they didn't win because, you know, the other team was just better, or his team wasn't at full strength, then he knows that he can probably even keep looking at trying to do the whole signing for 2 years and opting out after one. But the landscape of the NBA will completely change again, regardless of what team he goes to, but obviously even by going to the Rockets, who are already really a really good team with James Harden and CP3 playing. And, you know, obviously they would have to make the salary work and move some players like maybe Ariza or Eric Gordon and stuff like that. But, you know, you think if the owner or management are going to be hesitant, if they know they have a chance to add LeBron, they'll cut half the team if they have to, you know. So that's how much of a landscape change he makes on a team.
And I think one of the reasons he would consider going to Houston is that's where Carmelo wanted to go initially, and they've always wanted to play together. So could you imagine a team that had James Harden, Chris Paul, LeBron James, and Carmelo Anthony?
Yeah.
With what's the center?
Capella. Capella. Mm-hmm.
Could you imagine that team?
That would be a scary lineup. I mean, you could pretty much, you know, put up 65 to 70 wins automatically before the season even starts. I know they can't really rest guys, but you could pretty much have half the season between some of those guys where they don't even play 8 to 10 games with knick-knack injuries and, you know, report that they have knick-knack injuries and just save everything for the playoffs. I know LeBron would never do that because he always comes to play. You know, he doesn't like sitting out games, and he, you know, whether it's for stats or whatever, he feels like he owes it to the fans to, especially when he goes on the road, because you only get to see him probably one time, especially when you go to the East. But, man, it would be a scary thing. I'm wondering to see how it plays out during this season, just in the West. Like, right now, if the playoffs were to start, the Rockets and the Warriors would play each other in the Western Conference Finals. But different from the past years would be that the Rockets would have home court advantage. And I know in the playoffs that's a very big deal. I don't think it matters as much for Golden State that it does for the Rockets. And if they were to push it to 6 and 7, if they win, they probably clearly don't feel like they even need LeBron. But then again, the Warriors made it to the finals and still won and got Kevin Durant. But on the flip side, if they were to lose to the Warriors, I think that would really behoove them to really feel like, okay, we need to somehow figure out a way to get LeBron on our team, because if we have LeBron, we can't beat the team because we're that close to beating them already. Because there's nobody else out there that to go kick. I don't think if LeBron doesn't go there but they pick up Carmelo, I don't think their chance to improve by that much to beat the Warriors. It just doesn't. It doesn't change that.
All right, speaking of Melo and teams that can potentially beat Golden State, why are the Oklahoma City Thunder struggling the way they are?
I wouldn't have probably said the reasons they're struggling right now. I would have to go with the coach. I think earlier in the season, I was like, I think it's better if Melo maybe thinks about coming off the bench, kind of like Dwayne Wade, you know, later in his career. Just, you know, you can kind of be the, like, you can be the go-to option. Like, play like you played with the Knicks with the second option. You get the ball, you ISO, post up, you know, shoot the mid-range, whatever you want to do. Because, and let Paul George and Russell Westbrook kind of take control of the first team. And at the end of the game, you can still be in the game because we need you to be a decoy that we can use on the offensive side of the ball. I think now, like, I've watched the last three games that they played. I have no idea how at 1 point for a minute to two to potentially 3 minutes in a game, I don't care if it's at the end of the first quarter, beginning of the second quarter, there is no way you cannot have one of those three guys on the court at all times. And I saw three back-to-back-to-back games, which means that's the way he has a rotation where Westbrook, Carmelo, and Paul George were not on the court at the same time, or, you know, individually, one of them were not on the court, and it's all the bench players. And, you know, it's the end of the first quarter, beginning of the second quarter. That is on the coach. That means you don't understand the rotation. You don't understand what you need to stay in games. If you have a 5-point lead, to maintain the lead. if you're behind in the game, not to get down even more, but to kind of at least stay competitive, you've got to have at least one of those guys on the court at all times. And I do feel like if they keep being hovering around 500, you know, hovering around being in the 8th seed, maybe in the 7th seed, back to the 9th seed, you know, every other day, they have to really figure out a way to better utilize the lineup that they have. And I highly doubt Carmelo is willingly going to be, say, hey, I'll go to the bench like Dwayne Wade did, because, you know, their roles are different. But I just feel like that would be better. But if they're going to stick with the lineup that they have now, Billy Donovan has to figure out a way to have one of them on the court at all times. And
And that's just a simple fix. You have one. So you can start all three. I agree, Carmelo should come off the bench. But you can start all three and eventually take one of them out. Then they can come in and relieve the other guy. So that's one way they could fix it. Also, run more pick and roll with Carmelo and George and let Westbrook just do his thing. You got three of the three top 15 players in the league. And you mean to tell me y'all can't come up with a better offense than an ISO?
Mm-hmm.
Run some pick and roll, get Westbrook off, let Paul George come in, do his thing, get Paul George out, let Carmelo start doing it. Then Westbrook comes in. It's ways of doing that, and that shows that Billy Donovan is not ready for the NBA.
No.
He's not used to this kind of talent.
Right.
So his game, well, his coaching style is best suited for the college game.
Yep.
So the Thunder, the organization may want to say, hey, it's time for us to, you know,
move on.
Yeah, because we're going to lose these guys after this year. We keep you know, going at this rate.
I think, I don't know, like you said, I don't know if they would do it, but if they are really open-minded about making a coaching change during the season, I think somebody that could probably come in right away and really make a good impact would actually be Mark Jackson. I think Mark Jackson would be an excellent coach because he used to be a player. He used to be a starting point guard on teams that always were going, either went to the final with the Knicks or always in the Eastern Conference Finals, you know, whenever he was even with the Pacers and stuff. Like, and even to some degree, when he was coaching with the Warriors, he has something to do with turning that franchise around. So now you give him three future Hall of Famers on the team and to be able to figure out pick and rolls, like you said. I mean, and it's, you know, you can literally mix and match pick and rolls. You could do Westbrook, Paul George, Westbrook, Carmelo, run double pick and roll to where you run a pick and roll. All right, you didn't get the mismatch you wanted. You go to the other side or move the ball around. And I just don't see it because – and I just don't see that because, for the most part, Russell Westbrook is the main guy who's had to change his game so much to where he's not shooting the free throws right now. His field goal percentage is super low because he's not even attacking the baskets because he's already so tired by the time of trying to do so much because most of the time they're behind in games, and now he's having to do extra, but he also knows he has to pass the ball, so now he doesn't have the same rhythm that he did last year when he was still dropping over 30 a game and getting rebounds and getting assists. He has the same energy. If anything, he should have more energy now to go take over a game, but because he's trying to make the guys happy, now he's not getting his own rhythm in the game, and then fourth quarter comes and now he's trying to take over. He doesn't have a rhythm, and it's not, his jump shot has never been, you know, the greatest of jump shots on any guard in the league, because his game is predicated on momentum and driving to the basket, getting the free throw line, making easy baskets. Now you're not letting me go to the rim. Okay, now my mid-range jumper is wet and I'm making it all the time.
Have you ever seen a player that plays 100 full speed the whole game,
never.
Like Westbrook? You've never seen that.
Never.
Like you said, you have to control him because you want to save him, you want to preserve him. So when you get to the playoffs, you'll have that explosive Westbrook. So we're gonna start a hashtag Mark Jackson to OKC.
All right.
That was spot on. Yeah. He'll have him playing defense. That was just great, man. I was like, when you said that, Mark Jackson's a reason
point
why Golden
mentality.
State, yes,
mm-hmm.
They're in the position they're in because he had them buy into defense. So Steve Kerr came in. All he did was bring an offensive philosophy, and bam, look what you got. That was a good one, Serge. Yeah. All right, so we're going to have a segment now that towards the end of the show, we're gonna call it What's Been On My Mind. So, Serge, what's been on your mind?
What's been on my mind is actually last week after we had the podcast, when I got home and watched some of the highlights of all the games that happened throughout Sunday, and obviously the game that had the Seattle game when they played Jacksonville. And I saw, and I'm sure most of the audience, if you pay attention to sports and especially football, you probably noticed and saw that there was an incident where one of the defensive tackles from Seattle he was so upset that, somebody was saying something, throwing things at him that he almost wanted, he literally wanted to go into the stands. Kind of like reminiscent of, the Malice at the Palace with Ron Artest and Steven Jackson and those guys, in Detroit. And my whole thing for, bringing this up as the top, what's been on my mind is, the reason why that player even got to the point of wanting to or even thinking about going into the stands is a problem. And that starts with the fans. And I think the fans who buy, whether it's a $30 ticket or a $50 ticket or a $500 or $1,000 ticket, obviously if you buy the more expensive ticket you buy, the closer you are to the field, which means you probably have more access to saying things which you want to say that the players will actually hear because you're close in range enough for them to hear. I just feel like when you buy a ticket and you feel like you have the license to say and do whatever you want, I think it sets a bad precedent for so many other people, especially kids. Like if I were to give an example of like we're all, for example, if the Colts and the Cowboys played and they played at AT&T Stadium and I went to the game and I wore my, say, Andrew Luck jersey, and I'm there maybe with my wife and, kids potentially, and we have a couple other, family friends that are there who are not even really, into football, but we had tickets and we gave it to them or whatever. I feel like there would be Cowboys fans who would obviously be yelling like, oh, Andrew Luck, you suck, and your team sucks, and all this stuff, which I think to a degree, it's very within reason to yell those type of things to a player or a potential fan that's there. But I think it starts getting to a point where, I know nine out of 10 times, most people are saying and doing things under the influence of alcohol, which is never an excuse. But the fact that you do it, what it does is, it's not what it's doing to me because maybe I'm an adult and I can handle it. But it's like all those kids that are sitting around and listening and hearing, whether you're throwing things, you're cussing, you're basically enabling them to also be able to or want to do the same thing. Like, hey, if he can do it, I can do it too. I want to be a part of this. Or when I grow up to be old enough to where I can drive myself to the game, I'm 18, I'm 19, I'm a college kid, I'm having fun, I'm drinking, even though I shouldn't be drinking. Or I already tailgated and I'm already kind of intoxicated. Well, now you're giving me the, rhyme reason. And, and I know I touched on this on last week's podcast and also earlier in the podcast about the, why we want to do this or what we came about. What is the goal that we want to accomplish? I think just making sure that people really respect the game for what it is, respect the players for who they are, respecting the people that are around you as, treat them like that you would want to be treated. Because I'm pretty sure if you were to go to an away game and you're there, you wouldn't like it if people are yelling at you. And then you'll start seeing stories that come up on the news like, somebody got beat up after the game. Somebody waited out in the parking lot. Somebody got their windows bashed on their car. And that's when it starts going over the top, because it has nothing to do with the game. It had nothing. You didn't impact the game and the outcome of the game. Who won, who lost doesn't matter. Who's going to win next week? Who's going to go to the Super Bowl or the finals or whatever? You don't have any impact on that. And I think if fans would just really realize that you set the example when you're at a game, cheer your team, boo the other team, but leave it at that. I think by throwing things at players, calling names and, degrading their family and kids and their personal, whether it's wives or their significant others, I think that's when it starts getting to a point where you will have these incidents And, you know, it's like we can't wait till something bad happens then to try to fix something that's an issue, because I feel like we are headed down the path where something really bad is going to happen to a fan or a player because of something that happened. And then now we're going to figure out a way to, okay, how are we going to, you know, enforce more stricter rules on fans? If they're in the second quarter and something is going on, you got to kick them out the game right then and then. Don't wait till the fourth quarter when they already went over the top. Now you want to kick them out, or now you're banned from, you know, not only going to your stadium, they should be banned from going to any stadium.
Exactly. So what's been on my mind? College players skipping bowl games and still being allowed to travel with the team. This weekend, was that yesterday?
Yesterday,
Royce Freeman, he's going to be one of the top picks in the 2018 NFL draft. Excuse me. He decided not to skip the bowl game, which I understand, because you have to be selfish in order to protect your brand. But you have to understand that your decision affects these other guys who are out there depending on you, and they really could have used him because they lost 38-28. The problem I have with it, as a coach, why would I allow you to give the pregame speech when you're not going to be out there on the field with your guys?
Mm. You're not going to war about.
Yeah, I don't see any benefits from that whatsoever. Mm. If you decide to skip the bowl game, you don't want to play, you shouldn't travel. You should stay home and watch the game. That way you can maybe look at film and get really prepared for, you know, the NFL draft. So that's what's on my mind. I don't have a problem with them protecting themselves, because I would do the same thing. If I know I'm going to be a top pick,
yeah,
why should I take the chance of going to a bowl game and getting injured? So I totally get that. But I don't get the fact that if you're going to come to the game, play.
Yeah.
If you're not going to play with us, don't call. Send a tweet out. Give us some love on the tweet or something like that. So that's what was on my mind.
Yeah.
All right. I want to thank Anthony Roberts of Roberts Media Group for having us be a part of their brand, and Blog Talk Radio for giving us a platform to do this podcast. We want to thank you for listening to episode 2 of Sports Life Talk, where life without sports is just talk. Serge, can you give our social media handles?
Social media at Sports Life Talk, like Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter, soundcloud.com/Sports Life Talk. We should also be getting our podcast on iTunes as well really soon, so be on the lookout for that as well.
So we will see you next time. Feel free to drop us a comment or any questions you have, and we will respond to you as quickly as possible. Thank you for listening.
All my life, been grinding all my life. Sacrifice, hustle paid the price. Want a slice, got to roll the dice. That's why all my life, I've been grinding all my life. Yeah.